Welcome, DLH. We are in another episode of our DLH Insights podcast. Welcome back to all of our listeners, whether new or old. We are so happy to have you with us. Today is a really great day to share some more insights across the business with you, and I'm very lucky to have a haiku master with us today. Barrett Weiser is here with us, so he is going to be our guest, and he's going to share a bit about himself and some really phenomenal stories that he's had in his life. And then, of course, we will always close with our really good and wholesome call to action so that you guys can connect with Barrett and get to know him better. So, Barrett, welcome. Thank you so much for being with me today. If you could introduce yourself, I would love for you to share more about your story with our listeners.
Thank you, Porter. My name is Barrett Weiser. I'm a proud veteran of the United States Navy and United States Navy Reserve, and I'm a very happy DLH employee. It's good to work for a company that puts its money where its mouth is and supporting so many veteran community and civil rights type issues, and where DEI is not a pejorative, but an honorable goal of the company, because we all, it's a big table at DLH and we all have a seat there.
Absolutely. And I'm very glad that today I get to sit next to you, Barrett. So thank you very much for your service with the Navy and the Navy Reserves. I sincerely appreciate it. And I hope that through some of the work with DLH, we get to participate in serving back to that community a little bit here and there as well. So thank you very much for standing up for our freedom and also for keeping everyone in mind. So you mentioned DEI, just making sure that it's inclusive community. I think you are a very astute leader in that regard, Barrett. So thank you very much for being a role model for us.
You're very kind, Porter.
Thank you. Yeah. So I would love to get into a story that you have shared with me. And one of the reasons why I wanted you to have a spotlight on our podcast is you shared a little bit about your history with the 9/11 tragedy. And I watched a really very well done video, and it included a lot of your story, but definitely not all of it. So if you have some time, if you could share some of that story and that experience with our listeners, it really touched my heart and it was very emotional. So I can't imagine what it was like to go through that yourself. So if you don't mind sharing, I'm sure our listeners would be interested to learn more about that.
So let me start by saying that my role after 9/11 was insignificant to the national tragedy and the tragedy of so many families who lost loved ones on that day. And for 20 more years in a protracted war. And so what I did and how I did was hopefully to give a little bit of comfort to those who had suffered such a great loss in the immediate aftermath of the cowardly attacks of 9/11, and specifically to those families of Flight 77, American Airlines Flight 77, and the families of those who were killed at the Pentagon. The American Airlines, and I can't speak to their policies or how they do it, but generally after an incident, an airline will set up an incident response center and provide their care team members to that incident response. And American Airlines had set up their incident response at Dulles Airport. Pentagon had set up their incident response at the Sheraton in Crystal City. I don't think it's still a Sheraton, but the manager there was a Vietnam veteran. And when he heard the military was looking for a place to set up the Pentagon Family Assistance Center, he volunteered the hotel. Wow. So the military set up there, and very early on, General John Van Alstyne, just an uncommon American hero who was in charge of the Pentagon Family Assistance Center, said, "Why is American Airlines out at Dulles and why are we here? We all suffered the same tragedy. Let's be together so we can give comfort and care to one another."
Yeah.
And probably the biggest difference that I saw between the World Trade Center site and the Pentagon Family Assistance Center was the military was in charge of the Pentagon and therefore was in charge of the response. Whereas in New York, there were multiple agencies and companies that were all trying to provide a coordinated response. Right. And again, General Van Alstyne's leadership and his team were just stellar. And I had the honor of working on that team as a volunteer and bringing other military volunteer members to that team. I actually was on active duty in the Navy Reserve in New York, in Buffalo, New York, when 9/11 happened. We had completed a weekend where we were writing a charter for the Navy enlisted folks who support Naval Sea Systems Command. I was actually had the honor of being their first senior enlisted advisor. And while we were there in Buffalo, I had an opportunity to speak at the memorial service for the Minemen's Association of World War II. Oh my and gosh, these are guys who were on the minesweepers who swept the beaches clear of mines for the Normandy invasion. And they talked about how during that time, they left the fleet behind and the minesweepers were alone very early in that morning, targets of the German gunners, because they had to complete their mission. They had to complete their pattern. Without the minesweepers and so many others that day, the mission would not have been successful. And in that group were a lot of Pearl Harbor survivors. And I had the chance to speak at their memorial service. It was a very humbling experience to speak at the memorial service for people who had witnessed war firsthand. Witnesses to history. So on 9/11, I was having breakfast with one of the Pearl Harbor survivors, and we saw the second plane hit the World Trade Center. And at that time, he told me that his son-in-law were a flight attendant and a pilot for the airline that hit the World Trade Center. He didn't know if they were dead or alive, but he turned to me and he said, "This will be your generation's Pearl Harbor," as it has been.
Yeah.
And we were stopped from traveling back to Washington that day. All flights were canceled except for those for the rescue teams who flew. And we weren't allowed to travel again until September 13th, which actually happens to be my birthday. And on that day, myself and another chief petty officer put on our uniforms and we drove from New York to Buffalo, New York, to the Pentagon. And on the way, we stopped in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and had lunch. And when we asked the waitress for our bill, the waitress said, "It's already been taken care of." And somebody had written us a note and said, "I just want to say thank you."
Wow. That was very powerful.
Very powerful, very humbling. And so many people came together that day. We got to the Pentagon and we saw the hole in the wall. And I went to the Reserve Center and I was recalled for 27 months of active duty. And initially I helped the Reserve Center in Washington mobilize 55 Naval Reservists who participated in the immediate stabilization and recovery at the Pentagon, supporting the FEMA team, Federal Emergency Management Agency team, of which I'm still very good friends with some of those team members. We supported the interagency team that was set up at FEMA headquarters. And we did a lot of the on-the-ground things. We moved equipment. We borrowed we borrowed forklifts from the DC National Guard while the commanding generals were working out how to get a forklift. I had two guys, one named Knuckles and the other named Knobloch, two second class petty officers in the Navy who took several pounds of coffee over to the DC National Guard and acquired the forklift that FEMA needed to move materials. And when the recovery of the Pentagon was was finally determined to be as complete as it could be, I moved to the Pentagon Family Assistance Center, that common center that I started this discussion with, where the military, the people who, the military and civilians who were killed in the Pentagon that day, and the people who were killed on Flight 77, where their families were receiving federal services, and it's very difficult to put together a tragedy. We see a lot of shows on TV with DNA and things like that. So the families had to bring in hairbrushes and materials that had DNA from those that were killed. And that material had to be matched to what was recovered at the Pentagon. And every day there was a letter that came from, and I think this was the ATF lab in Maryland that was doing the processing. I'm not sure. I had to pick up that letter and carry it. It was for the general's eyes only. And it contained information on the identification, they would, the general and his staff, he was a three-star general. There was one-star chaplain general, Jim Spivey. And there was a Navy commander who was the XO executive officer. I'm sorry, I forgot her name. Anyway, they would brief the family members. The press was not allowed in. The general made it very clear one day when a somebody from the press came in that they would be escorted out. And he did that very, very quietly. The individual was identified and they were removed from the building. This was not for the press. People who wanted to come to the Pentagon Family Assistance Center with an entourage were turned away. The newly crowned Miss America, who I believe was from Oregon at the time, came and sang at the sang the national anthem for the families and left. Just herself, her driver, they came, they left. Every day, almost every day, Linda Carter, Wonder Woman, was there with Secretary Cones, the Secretary of Defense Cones' wife, talking to the family members, trying to provide comfort. General Shinseki's wife, who was the Army Chief of Staff, was there almost every day with them. At the end, I did get a hug from Wonder Woman.
Nice. I bet that was a very powerful moment, too. Just honestly, just the emotion that's coming forth with just retelling the story, feeling it in the moment must have been a whole other experience, because how heavy to go through that in real time and to make sure that things are getting done, that families are getting taken care of, that questions are getting answered, that there are operations that are continuing to move on, making sure that all of that operates well, but then walking through such a heavy event and maybe being able to process in a corner really quick, but also maybe not, maybe having to push through and just make sure that people are taken care of, that weighs a lot on a person's emotions, on your body. That is quite an experience to have gone through.
It's a humbling honor and a privilege. I know I keep repeating that, but that's what it is, to stand with somebody in their, in the depth of their sorrow. You cannot know the depth of their grief and sorrow. That morning on 9/11, they kissed their loved ones goodbye. They shouted their loved ones goodbye. They made them walk the dog. What we and all the other volunteers at the Pentagon Family Assistance Center, and there were hundreds, there were federal agencies, There were civilian agencies. One couple ran a charity. Their daughters had been killed on the plane that was destroyed over Scotland. And they were just there to talk to survivors about being a family member of someone lost so tragically. The opportunity to provide a ministry of presence is why we walk this earth. If we are not here to help one another, we have missed our calling, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a very powerful message, especially now with so much going on in the world. I mean, I guess especially now is kind of a misnomer because there's always so much going on in the world for every single person in our communities, whether national or global. There's always just so much to walk through right now.
And when we pray to be lifted up, we have to reach down. It is an obligation that if you're a person of faith and you profess that, you cannot raise both hands up. You have to reach down. And I was not reaching down in helping these people. They were helping me by giving me an opportunity just to pray with them, to talk to them. General Van Alstyne would say to us, go find the person who is staring into space and sit with them.
Wow.
We had care dogs there. Care dogs are wonderful.
Oh, yes. I like those today, too.
They are the most wonderful thing in the world. And he would tell us, He had a very gravelly, deep Southern voice, and he would say, you know, you need to take care of yourself. You may think you're tough as woodpecker lips, but you're not.
Wow.
And he would tell us, you know, you need to go home. You need to be with your family. You need to take a break. Yeah. And General Spivey would tell me that because he'd see me there in the morning. He'd see me there at night. My wife and my two sons, my youngest one, not so much, but my older son and my wife both volunteered there to answer phones, to run blankets, to make sure people had meal tickets. There was just a whole logistics operation. And I had the privilege of being part of that. You know, it's always good to carry meal tickets with you and say, are you hungry? Are you okay? Right. You know, the chaplain's right over there. And one of the things that happened is one day, one of the chaplains who had been at Dover, Delaware, where the bodies were removed to and processed at the mortuary facility there, was in, and he was talking about the processing, and he was crying. And I went to the general and I said, he's on the breaking point. He's a chaplain and he's at the breaking point.
Yeah.
And that's when the generals started making sure that we had decompression sessions.
Right.
The opportunity to talk with somebody, to share our experiences. And it's just as easy as, you know, we're all in this together. If I asked you three things that you learned, what would you tell me? If I asked you, is there a balance between the most horrifying thing you heard and the most beautiful thing you did? Can you find that balance?
Yeah.
And it was that opportunity to share amongst ourselves too, to reassure ourselves that in the mechanics of things, we were not losing our humanity.
Right.
And
wow.
And I was a tiny part of that. There were literally hundreds of volunteers. There were 15 to 20 chaplains. They were available 24/7 to listen, to sit, to pray. A person's faith did not matter. You didn't have to be a Christian and have a Christian chaplain. it was a chaplain. It was somebody to talk to. There were medical professionals there. There were just people like me who are either naturally empathetic or busybodies. I don't know which.
But either way, having that presence, like you said earlier, that ministry of presence is just incredibly powerful and meaningful. And firstly, Varia, after you've shared all of this with me, I just want to say thank you for the amount of time and dedication and the energy that you put into all of the families in this Pentagon Family Assistance Center. I can't imagine walking through that. And so thank you from the bottom of my heart for not only being able to take us on this journey with you, relaying your story, but for all of the people that you served in real time there. And I think I've said this to you before, I am a very firm believer that every penny counts. And when I say pennies, I mean people. Every person counts. And so truly, sincerely, it's just an incredible memory. And this is the second thing that I want to say is that DLH participated this year in our National Window of Service for Veterans with the 9/11 Day Foundation, which is a wonderful national nonprofit. And what they do is they help us remember that this is not just a memory. This is not just something that is left into the past. It's just something that happened. Absolutely not. This is something that we carry with us through the generations that have either experienced it in real time, that were victims, maybe their families are survivors of maybe losing a loved one, first responders and veterans such as yourself, and all of the shockwaves that this immense event has really affected over the years of recovery since then. So I thank you not only for your service in real time on 9/11 and the days following, but for your very presence today, for helping us to remember and to keep these principles, these values, this ministry of presence and unity with one another at the forefront as we walk through all of the a million things that are going on in this life. We went through the pandemic and yada, yada. It just continues. And so how do we make sure that we show up for others, show up for ourselves so that we're taking care of ourselves and then be the best for others? How do we remember and keep that at the forefront of our mind? So, Barrett, I want to say thank you for all of that. And before I let you go, I have two more things. The first one is I would love, do you have any last minute pieces of advice, or you have shown service to us and to our listeners? How can we show service to ourselves and to our own communities as we continue on this path?
Thank you. I'm so humbled when people come up and thank me for my service, because I joined at the end of Vietnam when I could not wear my uniform off base because of the emotions. And I tell all the young kids today in uniform, when they're greeted at the airport, people are giving them water and people are cheering them. The reason that happens is because Vietnam veterans and Korean War veterans would not tolerate somebody treating them like we were treated. Mm-hmm. And so I have a different way of saying that, but for DLH, I'll say it.
But we're recording, Barrett.
Yes, on a recorded line. And when people thank me for my service, I used to say, oh, thank you so much. Or I used to say, thank you for being somebody that was worth serving for. Now I say, vote. Go out and vote. I'm not telling you how to vote. I'm just asking that you vote. I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. One of those constitutional rights is the right to vote. Please exercise it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I learned from the Pentagon Family Assistance Center from General Van Alstyne is I am not tough as woodpecker lips. While I did not lose a family member that day, everybody's family member became mine. The memorial board with the obituaries became my board. I experienced some level of loss for each of those individuals. And I still suffer secondary trauma. Mm-hmm. Mental health is so important across DLH. We have so many licensed professionals medical professionals, pharmacists, technicians, factory workers who send medicines to veterans who are veterans themselves.
Yeah.
And who were taught, suck it up, be strong. What's wrong with you? He can take it. Why can't you? Our mental health is very important. And I don't know, as a society, as professionals, that we always support the mental health of one another. Because particularly if you're a licensed professional, if you have a mental health issue, if you take medication, that license can be at risk. If you're in the military, that qualification can be at risk. But you yourself are at risk. You have to take care of yourself. You have to provide a ministry of presence to yourself to be able to provide a ministry of presence to others.
Yeah. Absolutely. That is such a gift. If anything, from this episode, Barrett, you have really shared how precious life is. And if you haven't, you have life and flowing through your veins right now. Taking care of yourself is a very honorable gift. And so I will absolutely float that up of going and using your right to vote and then taking care of yourself, taking care of your mental health. I know DLH has some mental health resources, but there are so many resources now that you can access, that you can connect with, you can talk about with other people in your circle. If you want to be more anonymous, there are ways that you can do that too. And so providing those opportunities is something that DLH can certainly get better at the very least, but also encouraging the culture here to take care of yourself. You really need to take that 4 hours of the afternoon to just like sit by the shower. Cool. You need to do it. And so I really appreciate that, Barrett, of being able to bring forth that advice of exercising these muscles in our society that are just integral to being together and taking care of one another. So thank you for the advice there. The last thing that I wanted to say, and Barrett, maybe you'll indulge me here, is I think in the celebration of life that you kind of have brought forth, but also in the same vein of remembering, if you will, I would like to take a peek at my timer here and just take 11 seconds of silence so that we can remember this extremely heavy event, but also maybe there are heavy events in our listeners' lives that they need just a moment to reflect on, maybe connect, cry a little bit, and then see how we can connect further. So if you're okay with that, Barrett, I'm going to take a peek. Okay. All right. So in 2 seconds. Okay. Those are 11 seconds of reverence for what we've gone through in the past. Barrett, for your service, for the thousands of others who have served in the wake of 9/11 and the many other tragedies that we have experienced in our communities, whether big or small. Thank you to all of you who have stepped up to serve one another, to give hugs to one another, because they're so important. And then, of course, to take care of yourselves as a duty and a gift to yourself, too. So to all of our listeners out there, I'm so sorry I didn't caveat this episode with have a box of tissues next to you, but hopefully we can all connect with one another and you can reach out to Barrett at the very least to get on his list of recipients for his haikus because they are phenomenal, but also to connect with Barrett just to learn more about his story and the lives that he's changed. So Barrett, thank you very, very much for your time spent with us here today.
Thank you, Porter. It was an honor. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. So do I, Barrett. All right. So if any of our listeners would like to connect with Barrett, you can find him, of course, on Teams and through DLH. So please do and reach out to your friends and neighbors to continue these very important conversations, as well as go out to vote, go take care of yourself, go take that mental health day as much as you need. And if you have any other guests or topics for the DLH Insights podcast, please feel welcome to reach to me anytime. But until then, I hope you find meaning behind the desk and outside and the rest of your life as much as you can. And looking forward to next episode with everyone. Thank you.